What is up, Baton Rouge? Welcome back to the Tiger Pride Podcast presented by 225 Magazine. I'm Mark Clemens here as always with Jarrett Roser of TigerDetails.com. Championship Edition!
Get the net. Got the net.
Get the net. Get the net. We're just saying we would play that song if we had the legal rights to be able to do so. Also, I want to start this off by saying your boy was damn close to getting this score prediction almost exactly right.
What was your score prediction?
I said 42-31. So if Clemson would have scored one more TUD and then went for two and missed it, 'twas I.
Yeah. So I felt like I was reasonably close.
You were. I mean, we had the same general point spread.
And I think we both kind of talked about it. I know I thought that LSU would be up and Trevor Lawrence and company would keep battling and end up scoring a late touchdown. So that would have been, if that had happened, they would have been right on the mark with you.
Yeah.
But how about it?
How about it, man? LSU pulls it off. And I think we both thought the game, I mean, like you just said, we both kind of thought it was going to happen in this general capacity. Some back and forth early on, and then LSU eventually pull ahead.
Were you nervous at all early?
Yeah. At 17-7, I thought there was a shot that Clemson, because the defense was playing super well. I mean, so yes and no, I guess, because I did tweet out after the first couple drives, you kind of got, I mean, just in the sense of the stadium, which was very, what would you say, a 70-30?
Yeah-ish.
You kind of got a sense after the first two drives. I mean, LSU hadn't started the season punting on three straight drives. Well, really two, but they also started this game off on three straight punts. You hadn't seen that all year. And so you start to wonder, like, you know, did Venables draw something up like he did against Bama last year? Could Clemson make this a little more interesting? And then LSU does answer with a long touchdown pass to Jamar Chase. But then Clemson scores a long 52-yard career long for your boy.
Longest Potter. In a college football playoff championship game.
And then LSU does respond, but then when it was 17-7 and LSU's getting the ball back, you thought that was a pretty, in my head, was a pretty pivotal drive. Obviously, there was still a ton of football to be played, but just in the sense of momentum and how the game had kind of started, that was the one point after they scored that touchdown.
And that's the drive where Chase hits the crazy juke on the sideline to get him close, and then Joe finishes off, which Amos, our guy Amos Morrell, I think – anytime Amos has a good sense and knows he does, he'll repeat it often. And so he was very – he questioned me a couple of times, and then really it became kind of like a chorus. I think that play where Jamar didn't score was kind of like a turning point. And I was like, yeah, you're 100% correct. And then I heard him say that like five or six times through the night. I was like, yeah, man, it's still right. You got it. That was a monster play for him to haul that in, stop on a dime, and let the guy run past him to gain some more yards, and then pull back a couple plays later within three.
The only feeling that I had that was pretty accurate throughout the duration of the game was on the second and two, I said out loud, so actually this is a funny story. The dude next to me in the press box was a mod on Reddit, RCFB, which like, I thought was a much random thing to get a press pass, but anyway, and he looked like the most typical, if you just picture a Redditor, this is this guy. Very friendly guy. We chatted for a while. But anyway, I told him.
Y'all boys now.
I don't know his name, but yeah, he's a mod. That second and two on LSU's first touchdown drive, I said out loud, like, they're going to take a shot here. Second and two, I think, I mean, at the spot they were at, I think they're on right at midfield on one side of the far side of the 48. They hadn't crossed the 50 yet. I feel like that was probably four down territory if they don't get if it gets to fourth down, third and two, give it to Clyde up the middle or something. I felt like they could get that. And I just felt like that was a time to take a shot. And sure enough, Jamar beats his man 52 yards.
Sure enough. Crossed the 50 and then some.
And then some. Rabs had an A-plus tweet saying, I told you they'd cheer when they crossed the 50. Yeah, reason to cheer. Okay, so we kind of gone through some of it, but I wanted to run like sort of throughout the game and just sort of get thoughts on some of the bigger plays, some of the moments. I guess answer your question first. Were you ever nervous throughout the game? Did you ever think it was going to...
A little bit. At 17-7,
yeah.
But I'd always felt like as long as it was close, LSU would find its way to win late. And so at 17-7, you're just waiting for kind of a key play. I don't know that I was super worried yet or getting negative at least.
Yeah.
I just knew that something had to happen quickly and that if it got much beyond that, things could snowball because that game last year was, what, 16-14 Bama lead early in the second quarter.
Was it 16? Yeah. Was
and then Clemson just blows away from there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know that Clemson had some potential to go on a run of its own if LSU didn't respond at that point. And that's when LSU went on its run, was around the same time. And so just kind of reversed those roles, had that big play, Joe to Jamar, and then Joe rushes in, and that starts those 21 unanswered to end the half. And then you kind of felt like it was not in the bag, but close.
I think when you saw the offense moving the ball, you were like, okay, they're finally getting it together, reading what's going on.
It was, you know, talking to one of my coworkers at LSU Global, whose son is 8 and just, I mean, lives and dies by whatever sporting event involves a team that he cares about is going on at the moment. And she said he was having like panic attacks, did not know what to do with himself. He started the game sitting in the lucky spot on the couch, and then it wasn't working. And so he starts freaking out and going. And then at some point when it's 17-7, he decides he has to leave. He can't watch. And she goes and checks on him, and he's just in his room sharpening pencils furiously. And she's like, all right, like, calm down. It's going to be okay. And then when Joe scores that touchdown, they all call him back, and he comes back in, and he's so tense with his freshly sharpened pencil that he accidentally breaks the pencil in half with excitement.
How old is this guy?
8. And then starts apologizing. I'm sorry. Like, it was a good pencil, too. There was a good eraser on it. And they're like, dude, it's cool, man. It's a pencil. Like, it's going to be fine. Watch the game.
The LSU superstitions were out in full force for this game. I think there was like so much PTSD from that Bama loss in 2012.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, there was so much. I have like my buddies were all wearing, you know, had friends tell me they were wearing the exact same, like, head to toe, including underwear, same outfit they wore when they went to Tuscaloosa this year. I have friends saying like they got burned their shirt they wore to the 2011 or I guess 2012 game. Superstitions were out in full force. People had tickets and opted to not go to the game or sell their ticket because they were there in 2012 and didn't want to, thought they had the bad juju or something.
Yeah, that game, and I think we kind of touched on this at some point, that game, as much as was downplayed about the impact on the psyche of the program and the fan base, as much as had been downplayed through the years, was very real.
Oh, so real.
I mean, I don't remember if I talked about it on the podcast or I know I told you, but there was an instance this Halloween with some former players where just hearing the reaction from one of them when I said that I thought LSU was going to go to Alabama and win, there was such a weird paranoid... It was still haunting him, like the entire Alabama rivalry was still haunting him, that I could tell that it was a little bit deeper for a lot of them than they would ever really admit publicly. And certainly the fan base, after seeing that, I mean, for folks that don't remember the fun of that 11 season up until the January game,
yeah,
it wasn't quite like this. But it was
close.
It was pretty electric watching that team and seeing everything that was happening, and people were very confident. And then the way that game went to ruin such a potentially dream storybook season, really, when LSU goes down early, some people were going through some things.
And I have it on the talk about later once we go through this game, but the conversation going on about this team as the best team ever. That 2011 team was in the same, before the Bama game and the Natty, that team was in the same general discussion. Again, obviously more for their defense than this team and its prolific offense. But they were talking about, if they pull this off, is this going to be one of the best, if not the best, football team that college football has seen. But yeah, and I've the one kind of example is if you watch T-Bob's reaction when the open of the morning show that he's on, the day after LSU beat Bama this year, and his like 2 minutes of just like yelling into the microphone and kind of like unleashing his inner demons or whatever, was that like sums up, I feel like, how a lot of LSU fans felt for the past 8 years, not being able to get over that hump. And then again, you have it again. It all, they obviously got over that Alabama hump in Tuscaloosa this year, but then the game that really mattered was in the Superdome, and you kind of walk back in there and you're like, boy, if this goes bad. And again, we'll talk about this later as well, but all these players leaving, you're like, if they don't capitalize on this opportunity in this game with the season they've had, the offense they have, and the players they have on this year's team, if they don't find a way to pull this off, then how much longer is it going to be? But
yeah, all worked out for nothing
because it worked out super well. Yeah,
it's been, and they concluded on Monday, a dream season. I haven't seen your rundown. I don't know if we're going to get into some of the where this stacks up historically, but yeah. The fact that you're even in that conversation says so much to be not just, okay, this was the best team this year, but is this the best team that we've ever watched play a college football season? We said it most of the season. I hope everyone really took some of the time to appreciate what we're watching live, because, what a special fall and into January.
And we will talk about it, but this is one that's going to be remembered for, the rest of our lives. Things that, fans are going to tell their kids, who are going to tell their kids, that you're going to read about in record books and watch on, commemorative DVDs and all that kind of stuff that's going to come out in the next few days, already has come out. So let's run through this game. So it was kind of, you talk about, were you ever nervous? There was kind of a roller coaster of emotions at times, probably a little bit overreactive, not probably, definitely overreactive on both ends of the spectrum. Because when LSU comes out of the gate and Joe Burrow evades a sack and hits Thad for however many yards, before you saw the flag, you're thinking like, oh damn, like this could be starting early for the LSU offense. Of course, the illegal man downfield, was that on Adrian?
I think so.
Because I even watched the replay, and it didn't seem... whoever it was, I believe it was on Adrian McGee, but whoever it was...
it was Adrian.
Yeah. And he was just kind of following the guy who was rushing. He didn't seem super downfield to me, but the refs all night were kind of a question mark in my head on both ways.
That Pac-12.
Jeez, dude. Did you have the same... were you in the same boat? Like, before you saw the flag, were you thinking, like, if LSU gets this thing rolling early, this would become a blowout? Did that thought ever cross your mind, or never?
Yeah.
Was that way too overreactionary?
It was their first play. I was impressed with how quickly we were watching a Joe escape act for a 50-yard gain or whatever, 38-yard gain it ended up being, and just thought... I thought at the start of the play, defense is looking really good for Clemson. This could be a problem. And then if Joe is able to make that play happen, how much of like an early message is that? And so I don't know that I thought that quickly they were going to run away, but I thought it was about to be a really big statement play early.
I guess that was, that's probably more how I should have worded it. Cause we've seen Joe make those kind of plays, but I feel like they've typically come at some point late. Think of the 3rd and 17, you think of that play against Georgia when he's scrambling and kind of tosses it to Terrace over the back of the defense. Those have all come later in the game. So to happen on the first play of the game, it's almost like, geez. So super riveting opening to the game. So punt. Give props to Will Spires for pinning LSU deep like 3 or 4 times in this game. And if there was going to be a way for them to keep their defense in the game and kind of keep Joe on his heels and his LSU offense, that was the way you do it. And they set themselves up super well in the early first quarter.
Clemson did a great job with the field position early in the game. They did a great job timing their defensive play calls. And Isaiah Simmons was everywhere.
Dude,
early.
Yeah.
It was just, whether it be in coverage or in the backfield, Isaiah Simmons was everywhere. And that was, Thad had kind of alluded to not seeing many guys on that defense that really stood out. Just maybe one, maybe two. Isaiah was that one.
Yeah.
And they really, they got the most out of him early in that game, disrupting some things. On the flip side, Zach Von Rosenberg was good for his part. He helped actually flip the field position at one point, and then Trevor Lawrence ends up kind of negating that and getting the long pass to Galloway and getting some things going for their first score. But the punters you mentioned Clemson's kicker, both really good. And both defense is good overall. Other than that, you know, a couple plays here and there that Clemson was able to have some success on.
Yeah, and the weird thing about this game too is like LSU's defense did not play bad by any means, but it was almost like Clemson's touchdown drives. The opening one was 5 plays, second touchdown was 4 plays, third touchdown was 6 plays. So they never strung together these super long, time consuming drives. They kind of just were big gashing plays, which is what we talked about before the game, is that Clemson's really good at capitalizing on some big plays with the playmakers they have on offense, and LSU is really susceptible to some big plays. They really have been all season. And that was going to be one thing that you and I both talked about, that we kind of circled. And, you know, like you just mentioned, Trevor Lawrence hits Galloway for 42 yards to open that drive. And then 3 plays later, four plays later, they're in the end zone on a Travis Etienne touchdown run. LSU answers with the field touchdown 2 drives later. Again, a big play in their own right when they hit Jamar Chase for 52 yards to knot it up. And then the longest drive of the game for Clemson, 9 plays, 40 yards, when they hit the 52-yard field goal. Like we talked about, the longest. I thought Etienne had a pretty good game, and they had some creative ways to get him the ball. Their next touchdown drive was really the one that I think it was worrisome, not necessarily because of the score, partially, but to go 96 yards in 4 plays was a little bit concerning when they've had, you know, 3 out of their past 4 drives at that point had been scoring drives, a field goal and then 2 touchdowns after they scored here. So I think that was kind of the concern. And then T. Higgins rushes in for that little reverse that was a really, really good play by him, and running through some defenders to get into the end zone.
Yeah, they had some big plays that were really concerning in the way that LSU struggled to defend them. The 24-yard pass to Justin Ross right off the bat, and then the couple of ATN runs, and, mm-hmm. and you're wondering what the heck's going on with LSU defensively to start that drive, and then T. Higgins, grown man's his way to the end zone for a 36-yard game. Wasn't going to be denied as he got close.
It was a great play.
Showed some speed and then showed some toughness, and you were worried about some of the momentum that Clemson was building and confidence. Not that they came in not confident, but to see the way that they outcalled and mm-hmm. overpowered LSU's defense on that drive was a little bit concerning.
Yeah, and again, I think it goes back to the big plays that they were gashing. But LSU, as they have just about all season long, answers when the offense needs to. Joe Burrow starts the next drive off, hits Jamar Chase for 16 yards, and then another pass to Jamar Chase for 56, which I believe is the one that...
Yeah, it was a big play. Amos Morales said it first. Amos Morales was the first person that heard himself say it, I guess.
And then you heard him say it several times after that.
Yeah, it was a big play. And the first of a few plays in that same area of the field in that quarter where LSU was able to get the ball to Jamar and then Clyde and then Jets, and they were able to just juke a Clemson defender out of their shoes and have some big yards after the catch to help keep those chains moving and keep all that momentum that was building after that Jamar catch moving.
On this Amos Morales play, do you think did Jamar let off the gas a little bit, you thought? That's kind of been like a hot debate going around. I mean, again, it doesn't matter in hindsight, but I saw it on Twitter and I saw some people kind of reacting like he sort of juked him and then thought he could waltz into the end zone and then gets tackled by the same guy.
Yeah, I don't remember. I haven't watched that play back, honestly. When he juked him, I expected him to score, but I don't know. I hadn't dissected the tail end of that play that closely.
It didn't seem like it was...
They scored.
Yeah, I mean, that's ultimately they scored, and I still don't know. Maybe he could have gotten an extra yard or push or something, but I don't know if... He's very fast, so it seemed like he was running very, very a lot faster than I can ever run. Although you did tweet me about me versus Trevor in the speed competition, and I'm still feeling pretty confident. The next juke came on the next drive when Justin Jefferson, a little stop and go on the sidelines. Rumor has it Tanner Muse is still, to this day, falling. Have you seen that video circulating?
Mm-mm.
Somebody took a clip of...
That was the
Tanner
best
Muse,
of the three. That was the best one was Jets.
Yeah, it was
nasty.
I don't know if we've seen him do like that kind of. He's we've seen him be very shifty, but nothing to that degree. that was nasty. LSU scores on back to back drives. Hits Jamar Chase over the top for his second touchdown, and that's I think when you're starting to feel. I mean, you go from 10 down to 5 up and or 4 up. Math 4 up in this in a span of I don't know. Let's see. They scored the first touchdown with 9:17. Scored the second one with so yeah 4 minutes. You go from 10 down to 4 up, and then they have a chance to kind of pull the double since they get the ball at halftime. And that late touchdown drive was huge. I think that really, if the last drive, the last touchdown to Jamar did not instill the life back into the Superdome, which it did a good amount, the drive right before half. There's so many big plays on that drive. The scramble from Burrow with, I think he runs out of bounds with about 10, 14 seconds left on the clock, somewhere in that ballpark. You think he might get into the end zone for a second. But then the next play, he gets blitzed, takes the hit, hits Thad Moss into the end zone. And now LSU's all of a sudden up 28-17 with mere seconds left in the half. And they get the ball at halftime. And I think the Dome was kind of rocking at that point, feeling like LSU was about to start cruising into the second half.
Yeah, when LSU forced that third and long from Clemson and then ultimately forced the punt, I'm looking at the clock and thinking that it's a really big moment for LSU. And if they can cash in those points, knowing they're getting the ball back after halftime, that's going to be huge. And then Spiers punts the ball down to the 5, and you're wondering, all right, are they so backed up? We've seen some drives be backed up for LSU and them have problems moving it in this game at least. And then Clyde is able to get 25 yards right off the bat, and they just start boom, 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 right down the field. It's
classic LSU, yeah, or this year at least.
The run that you mentioned from Joe was so much fun. I think I watched most of that run with a drop jaw.
He's pointing to his blocker, directing his lead blockers, yeah.
It was a really big moment for him in that game. And then just an absolute dart to Thad Moss very quickly wide open in the end zone. And you had to feel great. At that point, it seemed like everything was starting to click.
Thad had himself a game, man. He was probably his best game of the year in a huge stage. LSU opens the second half with a 3-and-out and then a really frustrating series of events for LSU. They're forced to punt, and on the punt, Jontre Kirkland gets called for a kick-catch interference at the 15-yard penalty to move it from the 35 up to the 50. And then, let's see, 1, 2, 3 plays later, an unlucky face mask from Chase Young, kind of just reaching for whatever he can get on Trevor Lawrence, ends up grabbing the face mask, 15 more free yards, and then ATN pops into the end zone to cut the lead down to 28-23. They go for 2 and get that as well, so make it 28-25. And then that's kind of whenever the feeling in the Dome started to be like,
you start to think like you're in for a battle at that point. Yeah. It's going to be down to the wire. Instead, the LSU defense shuts down Lawrence and company the entire rest of the way and frees up Joe and the offense to help expand that lead. For nearly the entire second half of that game, other than a couple penalties hurting on that possession, what a phenomenal effort by both sides of the ball, really. But that LSU defense that had been so heavily criticized for so much of the year to come through and say Clemson's not getting any more points was great.
Yeah, I mean, the defense, again, for having some struggles throughout the night on these big gashy plays that we were talking about earlier. Their last, after the touchdown, that ATN touchdown, which was, again, aided by 30 yards of free penalties from LSU, they had 5 drives remaining in the game. Punt, 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 fumble for a grand total of 65 yards. So whatever Aranda did, whatever the defense kind of chalked up at halftime, again, aside from that one drive where they really helped, you know, aid the opposing Tigers, the defense locked it up. And then there's some more big plays offensively as well. There was a 3rd and 11 screen that was beautifully set up by LSU to Jamar Chase. He kind of follows a caravan of blockers, 43 yards. And that's before Joe hits Thaddeus Moss on a nice out route. Only a 4-yard pass, but great route by Thad. he has some hands. I mean, I know he's a boss, but
two of them.
And they're you can tell the genes run in the family, man, because he grabbed that ball, popped into the end zone. One of the plays later in the field, later in the game. I mean, forget what the exact situation was, but it was a third and long, and Burrow kind of rolls to his right and finds that again. He's got to jump up and snag that thing. But he had quite a game. LSU scores again on the pass to Terrace Marshall, just kind of a jump ball with Terrace, went up and used his height and his also two hands to snag, and LSU is up 42-25. That score happened with just over 12 minutes left in a game, but it felt like that was sort of the nail in the coffin, because you saw the offense clicking. I mean, in the middle, they had a missed field goal by K. York, which is a little disappointing, but the offense was moving the ball a lot better. The defense is playing probably the best it's played all game. Not probably, definitely. And only 12 minutes left. You got to think Clemson's got to score three times and keep LSU out of the end zone somehow. Just didn't seem realistic. And it just kind of felt at that point like the Dome was just kind of waiting for that clock to expire and LSU to walk away as chumps.
Yeah. You really, at that point, you wondered how many more points LSU was about to rack up, because they had that feel that they may start pushing into the 50s or 60s. But the LSU defense had started to do such a good job keeping the clamps on Lawrence and the Clemson offense that, yeah, you felt pretty confident at that point regardless, because you were going to have a lot go really poorly really quickly for LSU or really well for Clemson, that the momentum was going the opposite direction on both sides of the football.
Did you think that was targeting on Skalski?
Yeah, I don't know. I know
that's kind of how I feel.
I know a lot of people were really, were really negative about that call. Just think the way we've gotten now, the referees are going to be as cautious and strict with that play call or with that potential penalty call as possible as they continue to try to instill player safety. I think the whole rule is it's tough, man. They're trying to protect players, but it ends up being so strict sometimes. It's just a part of that bigger picture of where we are with this game that is inherently violent and how to handle it.
I think you said it well, that it's kind of an issue with the rule. Because, I mean, by letter of the law, like, yes, it was targeting. So, I mean, people who have an issue with it, I totally understand. But I think you have more of an issue with the rule and not necessarily the call or the enforcement of it. This has been an issue for, a while. That Devin White one from a couple years ago that a lot of LSU fans remember, when he, petted the guy's helmet and gets tossed for the half of the next game, which was at Bama.
The call that launched dozens of billboards.
Hashtag free Devin White. They need to address that rule. They also need to address ESPN's FPI, because LSU finished third behind Ohio State and Clemson in the ESPN FPI.
So dumb.
I don't know what the algorithm is, but it ain't right. Also, cool little thing I saw floating around the Twitters today. Grant Delpit's last play ever at LSU, forced fumble. How about that? And Stingley recovered it. Kind of a passing of the torch, a little changing of the guard there.
Everyone wants to see if Sting's going to be number 7 next.
I put my money down on Jamar, and then I think Jamar goes to Sting.
Yeah.
That's my opinion, but I mean, we'll see. So do you think Stingley gets it next? Was that a passing of the torch, or do you think it's going to go
Jamar?
Yeah. A direct, and he'll have it for 2 years until he's the first overall pick.
Yeah.
So Sting was also the 9th best Heisman odds next year. The early Heisman odds. And he was listed as a cornerback/receiver. Which is interesting. If that comes to fruition. So we touched on it earlier, but immediately after this game, rightfully so, there was the talks about where this team ranks as best team ever. There's been some pretty powerful quotes that have floated around the internet from people who have seen a lot more football around the country than I have, saying this team a lot of them like to word it a special way because they don't want to leave out the old, you know, Nebraskas or like 01 Miami, which of course I was too young to know what was happening, or try to compare. It seems silly to try to compare decades of different styles of football. But what's your assessment on this team being mentioned with the best of all time?
I think has a very strong case. I remember watching, I was younger, but I wasn't too young to not recognize what was happening with that 01 Miami team. It was a really, really good team. The defense was so much fun to watch. The confidence that they brought was not dissimilar from what you saw from this LSU offense this year. Obviously some big playmakers on that Miami offense too, with Andre Johnson, Jeremy Shockey, Clinton and Portis, and Willis McGinn, all those running backs that were in that backfield behind Dorsey. I don't think that offense was nearly as good as this offense. I don't think LSU's defense this year was as good as consistently as that Miami defense. I think it would be awful fun to watch those two teams play in, you know, in a video game world where you could do that sort of thing. And then same sort of dynamic, I guess, with the USC team that was really good a couple years later, and watching some of those USC games was a lot of fun, and that team was dominant all the way up to that blowout of Oklahoma. The Nebraska teams, it's a little bit more difficult for me to kind of wrap up, but
yeah, I was like one.
This season for Joe Burrow, I think statistically you look at, and I think you can make a very strong, if not as close to sure as you can possibly make an argument, that it's the greatest season by a college quarterback when you consider where he stacked up and all of the key statistics, and against the caliber of defenses that he did that against. You're looking at an offense that did things with his numbers, the receiving numbers, and Clyde's numbers that are unprecedented among FBS Division I teams. And so I think you can pretty strongly say that offense has a claim to being the best offense. And beyond that, hearing from opposing defensive coaches all year who say that they haven't faced another offense of this caliber. And so I think those no conversation of this nature is ever sure.
There's never going to be one answer.
I think those arguments are as strong as you can get in their respect. Full team-wise, I think they play with anybody. I think you look at the resume of having beaten 7 top 10 teams, having beaten the preseason number 1, 2, 3, and 4. They beat Oklahoma, Clemson. I'm trying to remember the group. Oklahoma, Clemson, Auburn, Florida, and Alabama by an average of 19.6 points per game, which is ridiculous. And so I think there's some great arguments there.
I think it's
like you said. I don't think you can tell someone who says this is the greatest team ever that they're wrong.
I think, everything you just said sums it up perfectly, because there's never going to be one unanimous answer that everyone says, like, oh, yeah, this is it, especially when you're comparing teams over decades from different leagues, different schedules. I mean, even year to year, you know, within this 1 year, you try to compare two defenses or two offenses, and people get all up in arms over quality of opponent and whatnot. So trying to do that over the course of decades is almost impossible. But like you said,
it's funny too, as much as people try to downplay certain aspects of, okay, so maybe this wasn't the best Alabama team that we've seen in recent years, and everyone's talked about how complete Ohio State was. How did Alabama's bowl game go with its backup quarterback?
Yeah.
And people want to downplay the Texas win earlier in the season before some things kind of went poorly for Texas. How did Texas' bowl game go against the Utah team that was very –
I think it was, was very, it
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think it's either 7 or 8 opponents LSU played won their bowl game.
Yeah.
So it is, it's hard to definitively say LSU is the best of all time. But like you said, the argument, if someone makes that argument, there's not much you can say to counter argue it.
Can't tell them anything. You can't tell an LSU fan right now anything.
No.
Forever. LSU fans are riding so high right now that as they watch one member of this team disappear to the NFL.
No one even cares because this season was so worth it to everyone.
Yeah.
To everyone in Baton Rouge and Louisiana, this season was worth all of it.
And as swaggy and cocky confident as a lot of guys on that team were this year and as a lot of LSU fans are, that kind of get under other fan bases' skin
they
anyway.
Backed it up every week, man.
Guess what? It's not getting any easier for folks out there to deal with LSU fans right now.
No.
If you Louisiana thought, versus all y'all at an all-time high.
If you already thought Louisiana was obnoxious and self-pride and likes to party and be
saddle
loud,
up, sweetheart. We coming.
You got another decade coming at you at least. But man, yeah, for all the, like you touched on, for all the numbers that Joe did and this offense did, it on paper is the best offense to ever see the game when you put it up against the schedule they played and the defenses they played. It's hard to argue against. And here's what Mike Greenberg said to kind of sum it all up in a really good way. And his words, there is no debate on this topic.
So look, I'm not here to debate whether or not LSU this season was the best college football team ever, because that is not a debate anyone can ever win. I'm actually not here to debate anything. I'm just here to say that LSU had the greatest season ever, and it isn't especially close. Yes, they scored more points than any team ever did. And yes, their players and coaches won. The Heisman, the Maxwell, the Walter Camp, the Davey O'Brien, the Biletnikoff, the Jim Thorpe, the Frank Broyles, and the Coach of the Year awards. They played 15 games. They never trailed in the fourth quarter. In fact, they only ever trailed by double digits one time. That was Monday. And they then outscored Clemson 35-8 after falling behind. But those don't tell the story of what this team accomplished. LSU beat 7 top 10 teams. That's the most ever. They beat 4 top 5 teams. Last time that happened was the year I was born. They're the only team ever to beat the entire preseason top 4. 3 of those were their last 3 games. The other was Alabama on the road with Tua. And here is my final argument. This season, Clemson, Oklahoma, Alabama, Florida, and Georgia went a combined 60-4 against everybody else. LSU beat them all by an average of 20 points a game. So, you can have all the debates you want. I'm just going to sit here and smile and say, I rest my case.
And so I thought he did a really good job of, I mean, just kind of putting it all in a nice...
Greeny realized what's coming from Booger and Swagoo and Ryan. He's
fully prepared.
And just he just had to get on the right side of history because he knows there's not a lot else you can say.
How cool was the story... It just seems like not only is this team really awesome and fun to watch and exciting and, I mean, dominated just about every opponent they played, but the dudes on the team have been great. I mean, just from our point of view, and I guess for the fans too who watched all the interviews, but just the guys I talked to have always been, it's been a great team to follow with, I mean, Joe's swag and personality and the Ohioan becoming a Louisianan and Clyde, the local guy, and all these dudes who have these sort of comeback stories. And some of that is a little bit overplayed, and kind of we joked about, you know, these other 5-star dudes that are also making their impact, like, you know, Jamar and Terrace all across the defense.
This team was never the, like what I said, it was never the island of misfit toys they tried to build themselves as.
But it was fun. They've been fun to follow. And then, of course, to be led by Coach O, who had stupid amounts of doubters, probably a lot of us either talking or listening on this thing. For him to get LSU to this level in his third season as head coach is impressive. And all along, he's never made it about him. And the media, we've over and over tried to make him ask what this means to him, and he won't give a straight answer. But just how cool has this story been to follow with all the different personalities and characters on this team led by Coach O, who kind of, you know, Louisiana guy, and to bring it all home, wrap it up in a bow, and of course to do it in New Orleans is just makes it even better.
I loved covering this team, honestly. I mean, when you talk about all of those aspects from a storytelling standpoint, it was just so rich with stories to tell from someone who obviously feels very passionately about Louisiana as a state and the...
Do you?
The culture and the people aspect of things, to have O lead it and so many key players from the state be such a big part of it, and for it to finish up in New Orleans was so much fun for someone that's known so many players on this team for so long. It was really special to see the smiles on their faces and the celebration in the wake of it. I feel like a weird postpartum depression type situation as I watch now all of these guys leaving and know that we just watched a relatively singular season that the odds of us seeing replicated, not only from a number standpoint and a ring at the end of the day standpoint, but from the personalities and the way they approached it. The way that those dudes talked with such confidence throughout the season is not something you see on an everyday basis, and they backed it up every step of the way. The way they had fun with one another, and just the dancing and the goofiness and get the gat and everything from start to finish. It's just been an incredibly fun few months, and congratulations to them.
It's a great group of dudes, like you said. And I mean, everyone from, obviously Joe and Clyde, then Jamar and Jets kind of stealing the show. But I mean, you also had, it was just a perfect mix of dudes. I mean, you had the Fajoco entire family in the Haka stuff, and you have...
Now, thanks, I think we got to take him to Texas Day Brazil.
Yeah, thanks to me. I don't think you understand how journalist salaries work, but see if we can make that happen.
We can split that.
The Moss family. I mean, there's so many awesome personalities, like you said, to follow. This is going to be a team that's going to be remembered forever. And like you said, Louisiana is such on a high right now that no one's even caring about all these dudes leaving, which is kind of the next thing that we're going to talk about.
Louisiana became Baton Rouge, and then ultimately New Orleans became the epicenter of college football for most of this season, where you're seeing celebrities from every direction in Tiger Stadium every home Saturday. And then you go to the national championship, and obviously everyone's on hand, all the former LSU players, all the random Saints players, Vince Vaughn. I didn't see Marcus Allen on Monday, but Marcus Allen became, you would have thought he was a former LSU player with how much he was showing up, and that was really cool to me.
Zeke
Elliott, another guy that was there and, excited to support Joe Burrow and company. And it's been great. And from the hype video standpoint, how much everyone across the country is talking about
Shout out to Will Stout, dude.
And the Mats and Brandon and Lindsay and all them did. So much fun, man.
Everything, yeah. I mean, you're right. Top to bottom, all angles of this thing have been incredible. Before we close out sort of this element, move to the next part, how swaggy was that video they posted of Joe postgame with the gat, smoking the
cigar? I can't say what I said. The swaggiest ever.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about people last week joking about, they've got Martin Scorsese hype videos.
God.
The beginning of that video, cool. Will and them crush that, man.
Dude, that may be the best. And they put out some unbelievable content all year. That might be number one on my favorite. I've watched that one so many times. Just the end with Joe sitting there, legs crossed, hitting the stogie.
That man.
Too much swag.
That
dude.
Man
too
walking out.
Too much swag.
Puffing the hell out of that cigar with his hat, his BD Joe hat. he started to let loose. You see him at Red Eye.
Yeah.
Getting the gat with
some
everybody.
Champagne bottles.
Just enjoying the hell out of a night. Partying like he's me, but with a lot more reason to do it.
I'm saying very well, very well deserved. Usually, I don't know what all reasons to party like that are, but.
That video was nasty. I lost it. I think I watched it 5 times in a row right off the bat.
Well deserved.
And then the next day you come out with that moment where Pat goes and sits down to join him, and they just look at each other and smile.
The smile, yeah.
God, man.
With the caption, look at us. Who would have thought? So, next topic we'll go to is the dudes leaving, like you mentioned. Let's start with the first one to drop, which was Joe Brady. Now, a lot of these names we're going to talk about, I don't think, are huge surprises. I think a lot of people at LSU, or fans at least, but probably coaches as well, thought they would keep Brady around for, I don't know, 1 year, if you're lucky, have him around for 2 years from now, so 3 years total, if you're lucky. But I kind of thought next year was going to be the last year, especially if the offense clicks again. He was going to get either a bigger OC job, either in the NFL, which he ended up getting. I guess it's not officially official quite yet, but seems to be on his way out to the Panthers. How big of a blow is that, or do you think LSU is well-equipped to carry this offense on to, obviously not going to be Joe Burrow levels, that's never happened in the history of college football until this year, but just carry this offense on, this new look LSU offense into the future?
So that one kind of hurt a little bit from an LSU and where they're heading standpoint, I feel like, because by the end of this, you had such a sense of so many of these players leaving early. We talked about it before. What else is Clyde going to do to improve his stock? What else is Jets going to do to improve his stock? What else are some of these guys on defense really going to do to improve their stock? And so it seemed like it would make a lot of sense for a lot of those juniors to make decisions. But the way that LSU had worked behind the scenes to try to keep Joe Brady for another year or two, and I don't think there were a lot of delusions that Joe Brady was going to be a lifer here unless some things really fell into place. But it seemed like they had been setting things up behind the scenes for months now to keep him. And you hear comments from O about how he feels like they're steps ahead in that process. You hear comments from Brady that he would like to stay at LSU as long as LSU wants him to stay. And so you start to feel like they've got him for another year or two. And I think it would have been really interesting to see with Joe Burrow moving on what that offense looked like without just the perfect storm of both of those guys coming into the mix and hitting their strides together. And so it's definitely disappointing to lose Brady and have him be a one and done. That said, I haven't had a chance to talk to anybody about how this plays out moving forward, but I think a lot of the concepts that he brought, it's never going to be the same as having him there, but I think a lot was learned and passed on.
Totally agree.
To E and Munoz and some of the other guys on that staff, that there's, I don't think you're suddenly reverting back to old LSU offense. I think a bigger question now becomes how that quarterback room progresses and exactly the makeup of who's play calling and what the relationship is there, who else you bring in to share some things with E, share some responsibilities with E. And I think there's a lot still to be determined. So I think it hurts, but I don't think everything we saw just completely disappears.
I agree. I'm also really curious to see just kind of how the dynamic shakes out over these next few weeks if they do go with just kind of promoting Munoz into Joe Brady's position and keep E on. It from day one, it felt like, not that he didn't want to do it, but I mean, the reports that he turned down the OC job when Les Miles was in charge, now he takes it, and he's been the tight ends coach for forever. It just seemed like he was content with where he was, and now he's doing this, again, this might be stretching the way I'm phrasing it, but almost as a favor to LSU, just kind of doing it until they can find the long-term guy. And so I've always wondered if, I thought the guy was Joe Brady, if he would kind of pop into that either co-OC role or just take it on full-time, and they kind of switch roles a little bit, however you want to phrase it. So I wonder if they do just promote Munoz into that position, or if they go a different direction, just keep E. I don't know. But that'll be super interesting. I agree with what you're saying, that the offense isn't just going to go resort back to its old ways. I think a lot of that, the look, I mean, it was going to change no matter what, because I don't know that a lot of the guys on the team now, or I mean, a lot of the guys in the country at the college level can make the throws and the reads that Joe is making. So you're going to have to do some things different no matter what. But that'll be super interesting. Kind of some breaking news here as well. Jacoby Stevens returning.
Okay.
Good news for them, for LSU. After losing all these dudes about to run through in a row, to get one back, especially a guy that I thought had a really, really good year this year. I've said so many times on this pod that I thought he was the best just pure tackler on the team. I'm excited. He'll be a guy, maybe potential number seven, to have on that defense. And honestly, will probably be one of the vocal leaders and the kind of the quarterback of that defense, as a guy who's going to be a senior and knows the system super well and kind of plays We've seen him play a deep kind of a linebacker role or sort of an outside blitzing guy. So he's a really versatile piece that I think is, I mean, awesome to have him back next year as a senior. And I think he'll increase his draft stock into next year.
Yeah, I mean, with everyone else they're losing, it's certainly big to have one of the leaders and a versatile leader on that defense back. They're going to have a lot of spots to fill all around, but having a guy like Jacoby in the middle of that defense is a huge plus as you have other players called upon to take on bigger roles next season.
And then right after that, a tweet from Tyler Shelvin, chill, I'm staying. So he'll stick around too.
Old bruh man added, chill.
A literal big piece returning. So here's a list that I believe is updated as of the time that we're recording of all the guys leaving. Grant Delpit, Patrick Queen, Justin Jefferson, Lloyd Cushenberry, Sadiq Charles, and Jacob Phillips all leaving early to go to the draft. I think a lot of these were not super surprising. I mean, like, we all knew Delpit was gone. We all assumed Jets was gone. I think out of this group, the most surprising to me was probably, I guess, Jacob Phillips. Either that or, I mean, Sadiq kind of had a coin flip on because he missed so many games. I could see him coming back and increasing his stock, but at the same time, he missed all those games. I don't know if he's in the mood to be wanting to stick around college for that many more years. Out of the list, who's been gone, who has declared so far, which one was the most surprising for you?
Well, so I knew Sadiq was gone.
Did you?
Yeah, so not him.
Gotcha.
We knew Grant was gone. I guess you, by the way Jets finished the season, I guess late in the regular season you wondered, and then the way the postseason went, you kind of knew where it was heading for him draft stock wise. And so for me, it's the linebackers. And I think at one point you thought Jacob Phillips was probably going, but not sure, and you didn't really think about Pat going, and the way Pat finished the season, it started to seem like he had really flown up boards, and now you felt like he was leaning pretty likely to go. And Jacob, you wondered if he was going to go as well. And so to lose both of those guys, those I thought were probably the two most surprising, and to lose both of them, I guess, is kind of tough moving forward. But they built some good depth in that linebacker core over the course of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly going to have some other guys step up. But
be curious to see how those freshmen, a lot of them were super highly rated out of high school, see how they can step in, how quickly they can adjust. Yeah. This is funny. I just looked this up. I told a buddy earlier that I compared Patrick Queen a lot to Quan Alexander and sort of the not only play style, but I think Quan left a year early, which a lot of people thought he could have come back and had a really big senior year. And then he obviously ends up having an awesome drafted in the mid rounds, having an awesome NFL career as a Pro Bowler. And then I just looked it up, and Pat listed at 6'1", 227. Quan Alexander listed at 6'1", 227. I think their playing style are similar too. Pretty quick dudes. Yeah, I think you're right. I think losing both linebackers is kind of a blow. What's going to be fun for me, at least, is I think it'll be fun to watch with all these dudes leaving. These are just underclassmen we're talking about, so we haven't even touched on the seniors, which maybe we'll do it a different day. But when you think about all the seniors who are going to be gone, you're losing Joe Brady, so the offense is going to look different, and then you have this slew of underclassmen all leaving. There's going to be a lot more position battles and young dudes fighting for minutes this spring and fall than we had the past probably 2 years. So that's going to be exciting to watch, and I mean, it'll be make for some really, I think, growing pains, but some fun, and probably a more youthful team this year than we've seen the past couple of years. But that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, it's all that storytelling that we talked about. It's going to be a lot different storylines floating around really quickly after a lot of the stories of this year ended up because of the success this season and the season continuing into January, we started to hear a lot of the same type of stories on loop as more people outside of the market started to hear them. You're going to hear
a lot of fresh stories on a lot of guys that have been a little bit in the shadows, playing understudy, stuff like that, or just not necessarily being in as big of a role. And so it's going to be very different, but there's going to be certainly a fun aspect to it. And it's part of what makes college football so much fun to be a part of on the coaching side, and then also into sports information and media, is watching these next classes of young guys find their way and mm-hmm. figure out their roles and step into bigger roles. And we're going to see a lot more of those type of storylines here in the next couple months.
That's going to be super fun. I'm also curious to see if LSU can stay, well, not stay afloat, but if they can stay relevant and, you know, develop into a really competitive team. I think a lot of times when you have the success they had this year, not only overall winning a natty, but to the offensive change they've had, and to have a guy like Joe Burrow come to the program and see that LSU now can, to prove to recruits that you can develop and send a quarterback into the, you know, first overall pick potentially. I feel like it usually takes one recruiting cycle to kind of get that into the high school kids. And I mean, obviously you have a really good class that's in the early signing period and look to close strong, but next year's cycle might even be more interesting when you look at some of the elite guys they already have on the radar and how that class can get put together. And sort of that's when you start building the year after year and trying to get to the levels that Alabama and Clemson have been on in the past. If you can keep, again, if you can keep next year, stay really relevant, stay in a lot of these games, even if you have to drop a couple or something, that next recruiting class cycle could be elite.
And I think some of that area is where I am interested to see what the impact of losing Joe Brady after just this year makes, because you saw some reaction of some of the current players and the signees to losing Joe Brady and some disappointment. And so as LSU tries to finish out this class with some critical pieces from, I think, the high school level here in a couple weeks, as well as potentially a transfer or two on the offensive side of the football a little bit farther down the road, you wonder what the perception dynamic is without Joe Brady now. Because I think that news coming right after the national championship kind of cut into some of the high recruiting momentum-wise that they were riding with the national championship, to suddenly see all the reaction of, well, now Burrow and Brady are both gone, mm-hmm. and wonder what the reaction is going to be like from some of those guys, because they very well, as a program, may still continue to do some big things offensively, but right now there's certainly room for prospects to wonder and maybe be less confident about it or a little bit more hesitant about it than they might have been if Brady was coming back. And so if Brady could have stayed, they could have finished his class out strong, had another strong year next year, then I think even if Brady leaves, you can kind of keeps rolling to a degree, especially if you look at some of the the positive still even after some of this news.
Yeah.
To see guys like Caleb Williams, the 2021 quarterback, still be really excited about some of the things he sees happening in Baton Rouge. I'm just interested to see how these next couple months go from a recruiting standpoint and how much hesitation potentially builds for some of those offensive prospects. Obviously, LSU had to sell guys to get here to do this in the first place before that anyone else had ever done that. So you have some confidence in O and members of that staff to sell guys on it, because when Joe Burrow and some of these guys that were part of this team came, it was really kind of selling them on a dream that no one had seen before. And now, even though some of those key pieces are gone, you've at least seen it play out once. But I really am interested to see how the reaction among some prospects, both in high school and on some other rosters looking to transfer, plays out over the next couple months.
Do you know how involved Brady was on the recruiting path with a lot of these elite guys? I mean, I guess mainly the quarterbacks, or was that more of a Munoz, or was it a little bit of both?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you hear Caleb Williams talk about his relationship with this coaching staff, the conversations and rapport that he had with Brady was a big deal, and Brady
Brady was involved in a lot of conversations with a lot of these guys, you know, particularly quarterbacks and wide receivers, and that's why you see some disappointing reactions from from some guys like a Coy Moore who's signed and obviously has a great relationship with Mickey Joseph and some other members of the staff. But Brady was very involved, and the opportunity to work with him was very intriguing to a lot of these quarterbacks and wide receivers who, you know, saw the way things were going in Baton Rouge and even before that knew that he was a guy that had been at the NFL level and they felt like could help get them also to that point down the road.
Does Frank Wilson get back on the staff?
I think Frank Wilson is a very notable name to watch during this offseason for LSU because I don't think that we've seen the last of some shuffling of this staff. And yeah. I think that he is a very intriguing candidate.
He'd be a huge
That can bring a lot back to this staff in a lot of ways. And as some people like Joe Brady leave, it frees up some space in terms of coaching numbers. I don't think what they bring from a coaching standpoint is exactly the same set of expertise by any means. But, yeah, I'd go ahead and keep an eye on Frank Wilson.
And then lastly, you mentioned the transfer portal. Obviously, De'Aaron King goes into the portal literally during LSU's Natty run, and there were some talks about him being interested in LSU and vice versa. I'm not going to ask you to make a prediction because I don't think anybody knows where he's going to go, but if he does wind up coming here, do you think that is out the door for Miles Brennan, or do you think he stays? What do you think he would stay and compete?
It's tough, man. You've seen Miles be so committed to being here.
Yeah.
But at some point, you look at what happened with Joe, and at some point you have to make some sort of a business decision and play football somewhere.
Yeah.
And so you wonder how far Miles is willing to push it. As much as he enjoys being here, how long does he wait before he feels like he sees writing on the wall enough that an opportunity might not be there? And has to make a move. And so I'm interested to see what happens with Derek. I know there's certainly some notable fire to the smoke that is referenced between he and LSU. What is happening now with Joe Brady? I think he's a name that when I mention as a transfer to watch in the summer, I think that is interesting to watch the Brady impact on. Mm-hmm. He's somebody that immediately came to mind. And so I'm interested to see whether he ends up here and certainly if he does, what that means for Miles, who's been such a good member of this team, as much of it as has been on the sidelines. The quarterback room and the offense is going to be under a lot of attention and microscope throughout the spring and into the next season.
I think that's kind of the two biggest things I'll be watching is, the coaching staff changes and kind of how that shuffle goes, which I'm just only assuming just because of recent history, a lot of that is not going to unfold until the day, right after signing day. That and then some of the potential transfers and if the LSU get, there's still a lot of weird big names out there recruiting-wise, and, you know, the Zachary Evans thing is – one of the weirdest things I've seen in recruiting, and then Jordan Burch and his commitment but not signing and maybe still taking calls from coaches. I mean,
this recruiting class is ridiculous.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's just weird. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to monitor it, and it's going to be interesting. But, man, what a season. It's been super fun. One that's going down in the history books. I'd wrapped up today before we came over here. To do this pod at 8 p.m. on a Wednesday. We had just shipped off a special commemorative edition, kind of recapping game by game and some of the big storylines of the LSU season. So that'll be published next week. I know Tiger Details is going to have a bunch of stuff, already has. And then we're talking about recruiting, some of the biggest notes coming up as signing day is rapidly approaching in, 2.5, 3 weeks, something like that?
Yeah, it's coming quickly.
So be sure to follow Jarrett on Twitter at Jarrett Roser. And of course, Tiger Details. Myself is on Twitter at MarkClements225 and all the 225 magazine brands. Facebook.com/225magazine. Instagram and Twitter at 225 Baton Rouge. If you like the pod, make sure you subscribe to it. Leave us a review. Let us know how stupid we sound or if we sound all right. We appreciate all the tweets people saying they support, they were concerned about my health. A couple guys tweet about my mental health. So I know I'm doing good and I appreciate it.
We've all been worried about you, Mark.
Yeah, we're good. Again, just no golf carts, which I avoided in New Orleans. We're good.
Got the net. Got the net. Got the net. Got the net.